Welcome to a podcast of Beyond the Book, a presentation of the not-for-profit Copyright Clearance Center. Copyright Clearance Center is the world's largest provider of copyright compliance solutions through a wide range of innovative licensing services and comprehensive educational programs for authors, publishers, and their audiences in academia, business, and research institutions. For more information about Beyond the Book and Copyright Clearance Center, please go to www.beyondthebook.com.
On behalf of Copyright Clearance Center, my name is Chris Keneally. I'm the moderator for another special edition of a program we call Beyond the Book. We're here to join the Book Expo America extravaganza this weekend at the Jacob Javits Center in New York City. And this is as close as I'll ever get, I think, to being an announcer for a World Series baseball game, because it's a beautiful day. There's some great players here to talk to and to watch as they tell us all about their stories, and it feels as if there's like a World Series here of authors and editors. I want to start with David Marinus, who is, among other many other things, an associate editor at the Washington Post and the author of four critically acclaimed best-selling books. They marched into Sunlight, War and Peace, Vietnam and America, When Pride Still Mattered, A Life of Vince Lombardi, First in His Class, a biography of Bill Clinton, and last year's Clemente, The Passion and Grace of Baseball's Last Hero. He also recently served as guest editor for Best American Sports Writing 2007. He is the author of The Clinton Enigma and co-author of The Prince of Tennessee, Al Gore Meets His Fate, and Tell Newt to Shut Up. During his nearly three-decade career at the Post, he has won virtually every major award in journalism, including the 1993 Pulitzer Prize for National Reporting. Welcome, David.
Thank you.
Indeed, well-deserved. You've written biographies of Bill Clinton and Vince Lombardi, among others. And since we're talking here about sports writing and how it may or may not be different from other kinds of writing, I want to ask you, did you approach Vince Lombardi as a subject any differently than you might Bill Clinton?
Well, I have to say that while I was researching the Lombardi book or writing it, Bill Clinton's second term was unfolding in some difficult ways for him. So it was a relief for me to go home from after appearing on television, trying to explain Bill Clinton, to go home and write about the Packer sweep. But in fact, I approach all of my books the same way, with the same level of research. Some are a little easier than others, but I try to do it the same way. My first motto is go there, wherever there is. For Lombardi, that meant uttering the famous last words to my wife, how would you like to move to Green Bay for the winter?
And you did.
And I did, and we loved it. But Bill Clinton and Vince Lombardi, they seem like polar opposites, one the symbol of the old way and discipline, and the other sort of the symbol of the post-war baby boom generation and all of its undiscipline. But in fact, I found a lot of commonalities between those two people. The obsession to win, first of all, incredible willpower, coming out of nowhere to succeed, Bill Clinton from Hope in Hot Springs, Arkansas, to become the first baby boomer president of the U.S. Vince Lombardi really struggling in anonymity for 20 years and almost ready to give up coaching, ready to become a bank official when he got his shot and went from New York City, where he lived most of his life, out to Little Green Bay and turned it around. Another aspect they had in common, surprisingly, was they were both educated in Jesuit colleges. Bill Clinton coming out of Arkansas, his first year at Georgetown, one of the seminarians there took him out for a hamburger and a beer, and after a short discussion, said, Bill, you really ought to come into the priesthood. And Clinton said, well, don't you have to be a Catholic first? He was a Baptist. But he was so good at adapting to any situation that all the seminarians thought he was a Catholic. And Lombardi, of course, was a Jesuit through and through, trained at Fordham. And There's a scene in my Lombardi book where his secretary in Green Bay sneaks into his office late one afternoon and sees him in there wearing priest's garments. I mean, he really sort of, in some ways, thought that was where he should have been.
Well, you also uncovered something that surprised me, that Vince Lombardi almost had a political career.
Well, yes, it would have been a disaster. But it wouldn't have been as big a disaster as what happened. This was actually when Richard Nixon was looking for a running mate, and he asked John Mitchell to check out Vince Lombardi. And John Mitchell came back and said, you know, his wife loves you, Marie, and he's got all of the things you're looking for, but there's one problem, he's a Kennedy Democrat. So Nixon took Spiro Agnew instead.
Your subject really is American culture, and I want to ask you about how sports figures serve as a lens into that for you.
Yeah, well, they can. I don't want to pretend that you know that sports figures are sort of the best representatives of American culture, but they can offer some wonderful opportunities to explore some of the key issues of American life. And so whether it's, you know, writing about the mythology of competition and success, as Michael Lewis does with Bill Parcells, in which is one of the stories in the anthology that I edited, or Vince Lombardi. What sports does is provides you first what you need as a writer, which is a great dramatic story, and then you can move into culture from there. I don't want to exaggerate it. There are times when some writers try to put culture into a sports book where it doesn't belong. But with some figures, you can do it. And so with, like, Jackie Robinson or Roberto Clemente, what better lens is there into race and culture in America than sports? And so in those ways, I think it provides incredible opportunity.
Tell us about your experience as guest editor for the Best Sports Writing Anthology. You got an opportunity to read dozens of pieces, and give us a snapshot of the state of sports writing today.
You know, I honestly think that sports writing is always had the best and the worst in writing, and so I don't like to sort of distinguish, you know, one golden era from another. I read some incredible pieces this year and some that I thought were stereotypes and trite. But the ones I picked, I tried to pick a wide spectrum of the most interesting stories that I could find. And so they ranged from Michael Lewis, you know, who's an incredibly well-known sports writer, and Sally Jenkins, one of the great columnists in the country, to a guy I'd never heard of, who I guess has a book coming out this year, named Derek Zumsteg, who the piece he submitted was on a website called USS Mariner, which I'd never heard of. And it was a fabulous deconstruction of a 1947 Bugs Bunny cartoon where Bugs plays all nine positions and beats the Gas House Gorillas. And he does it like he's from Sabermetrics, you know, the baseball. And he just deconstructs it in a marvelous way. And when I wrote a little pre-seed for each of the stories, and I said, you know, I'd never heard of USS Mariner. This piece probably could have used an editor. But on the other hand, an editor wouldn't have let it go, and it's a fabulous piece. So I was just delighted to be able to get it into the book.
How do you think sports writing shapes the way fans relate to the athletes and the sports themselves?
My feeling about sports, and I'm sure it's something that Peter, you know, has documented, is that athletes don't change. The culture changes around them, but athletes, I mean, you know, you talk about the golden era of Vince Lombardi and the Green Bay Packers, they were a bunch of roustabouts. You know, Jimmy Taylor, Paul Hornung,
that's
and the
right.
Same with the Yankees of the 50s and 60s. So the athletes today are the same as them. The culture has changed around them. There's a huge amount more money. There's a lot more television, talk radio 24 hours a day. And so the press is focused on everything they do, whereas in the 50s and 60s, really not until I guess, the early or Jim Brosnan in 59 sort of wrote the long season.
ESPN.
Yeah, ESPN. But starting then, it started to infiltrate some of what was really going on with these athletes, and then now anything they do, you know, Stray Rod is the headline of the week, you know, with Alex Rodriguez. So
Stray Rod.
It's changed immensely, and that changes the way fans view sports, although I have an odd contradictory sensibility about it, which my dad shares with me, which is, as much as I'm interested in hard reporting and believe it's completely necessary, when I'm listening to a ball game, I want to listen on the radio to the worst homer around. You know, someone like Ron Santo.
Exactly.
You know, I love that. And it really is a balm to everything else that's going around.
Yep.
You are not one to think of athletes as heroes, and yet the book on Clemente talks about him as a hero. What do you see in him that makes him a hero when others perhaps aren't?
Well, the truth is that I have some second thoughts about even using that in the subtitle of the book, because hero is the most overused word in sports. My first idea was to call it The Passion of Clemente, but Mel Gibson ruined that idea. Anyway, hero got into the subtitle. I love Clemente. He wasn't a saint, you know, as in the book shows that. But he was the rare athlete who was growing as a human being as his talents, well, they didn't diminish much, but as he was getting older. And he died in a way that is the classic definition of a hero, which is someone who gives his life in the service of others. He died in a plane crash, trying to deliver humanitarian aid to Nicaragua after a horrible earthquake there, where he had sent down aid and heard that Anastasio Somoza, the strongman of Nicaragua, was really stealing the aid, diverting it at the airport. He said, if I go, it'll get to the people. And that's what sent him onto this ill-fated plane.
And your reporting uncovered something, which was that he should never have been on that plane. That plane should never have flown.
That's right.
The documents I got that no one had ever seen before on that actual plane, the internal documents of the Federal Aviation Commission, were the most devastating I'd ever read, including anything I read about Vietnam. The owner of the plane did not know how to fly it. He'd taken it out once and taxied into a ditch. The Federal Aviation Administration was under direct orders not to allow tramp airlines like that take off or fly without surveillance. The pilot hadn't any sleep in 27 hours and had himself was about to have his license revoked. They didn't have a flight engineer on the plane, so they recruited a mechanic off the ramp to be the flight engineer. And the pilot was sleeping in the cockpit while it was loaded 4,000 plus pounds overloaded. It didn't have a chance, and it just barely got off the runway at San Juan and crashed into the sea.
Well, I think what we just learned was that sports writing isn't just about sports. It's about almost any topic, really, that involves human beings.
Beyond the Book is an educational presentation of the not-for-profit Copyright Clearance Center, with conferences and seminars featuring leading authors and editors, publishing analysts, and information technology specialists. Beyond the Book is the premier source for knowledge on the latest business issues facing today's dynamic publishing industry, from initial research to final publication and beyond.